smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Training a dog isn't easy. That is, if you're not a dog trainer. But experts assure me that there are some simple steps that you can take to lay the groundwork for a lifelong partnership that will bring maximum joy both to you and your canine companion. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast, where today's guest is Jean Donaldson, author of The Culture Clash and Dogs Are From Neptune, and director of the San Francisco SPCA's Academy for Dog Trainers. Welcome, Jean.
Hi, glad to be here.
I love these titles. Tell me about your books. What is Dogs Are From Neptune? Is that a response to Women Are From Mars and Men Are From whatever that was?
Yes. I mean, if men and women are from different planets, then actually dogs should probably be from another galaxy. I mean, because they really are very, very different from us.
And in what ways?
The main difference is to do with their cognition, the way that they think. They have palpably similar emotions to us, but their goals, the way they sort of, process ideas is very different. We have extremely complicated brains. We can be having this conversation right now. We can abstract all manner of things. I can, imagine your mind. You can imagine my mind. Dogs are doing something completely different from that. And the important thing is that it's not that what they're doing is less or worse or lower. I mean, I hate that word lower. It just is very different.
Well, it's a very respectful view toward dogs.
Yes, and I really am very uncomfortable with the idea that the value of dogs depends on their intellectual capacity. It seems like an arbitrary yardstick to use, but of course it's the one that humans use because it's our strong suit.
Well, and it's even an issue within the human community because, of course, there are people with all sorts of different kinds of developmental disabilities who are not less than.
Precisely.
What is the Culture Clash about?
The Culture Clash is about some of the very specifics in the ways that sort of dogs govern themselves, sort of among dogs, and the way that kind of clashes directly with some of our societal norms. For instance, I mean, in human society, it's not considered sort of an illegal practice to do something like write a letter to the editor or to, gossip. I mean, those are some of the ways that humans sort of behave somewhat aggressively. In dog society, they'll do things like growl and snarl and snap, and among dogs, that's considered to be pretty legal. However, in our society, we consider that to be, tantamount to assault. And so dogs need to be brought up to speed that in human society, that sort of thing is just not allowed. But it is not abnormal behavior for dogs.
When you brought this up, the first thing that popped into my mind is walking up and sniffing your friend's butt.
Yes. I mean, people often say, oh, my God, dogs are just like people. Or they'll even say things like, my God, my dog is punishing me by urinating, on the bed or urinating inside. Dogs find urine and feces fascinating. I mean, as you say, they go up and they've got a sense of smell estimated to be thousands of times better than ours, and they take those exquisite noses and put them right next to feces and right next to other dogs' rectums. I mean, so clearly they've got different priorities from us. If dogs wanted to punish us, they would not use urine and feces as the means.
Fascinating. Two questions on that. Why do they find feces so interesting? For instance, this morning Lulu and I were on a hike, and there was some horse poo there, and she took a bite.
Yeah, I think because they've got digestive systems that are very different from ours. They can actually extract some nutrition from that. The other thing that's important to understand about dogs is that their guts can manage all kinds of putrid stuff and bacteria loads that would kill you and me. But for a dog, they can do it, without a problem. And if there is a problem, if they do ingest something, I mean, dogs tend to be indiscriminate ingesters. If they do get something down there that's not good, they have a very very ready regurgitation reflex. They can bring it back up again. So not only can they handle stuff that's way gamey for you and me, they can also get rid of stuff that's wrong. So they're inclined to just sort of, grab it and ask questions later because they evolved in sort of an area where there was not ready food, and they have very good adaptations for making use and extracting nutrition from just about anything. They're very, very good generalists when it comes to their diet.
So we're gagging, but they're just fine.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Now, when they go up and sniff another dog's behind, what is it that they're learning from that?
The prevailing view is that they're obtaining some important information about that dog's reproductive status, their sex. So it's kind of like a little business card that on it says, I'm Buffy and I'm an adult female and I'm not spayed, but I am not in estrus. Okay, and that's very important information for dogs in the mating game. They really need to be able to tell, is this an opposite sex, is this same sex, and is this a mating-ready individual?
Very interesting. I had a neighbor who always said that her dog was checking his pee mail.
Yes, yes. Yeah, beautiful analogy. I love that.
That's a good one. So given, Jean, that there are so many schools of thought regarding how best to train a dog, what's your perspective on training dog trainers?
Well, I'm in the camp that is very strongly in favor of training dogs without force. We're very sort of frank about motivation. There's no question that you need to motivate animals, including dogs, to train them. There's no free lunch in the universe, and there's no free lunch in animal training. And the big sort of philosophy divide out there is whether to use primarily rewards in the form of primarily food, games, toys, etc., to train the dog, or whether to use force, whether to pin the dog to the ground, pull him on a collar, etc., to do things that are painful or scary in order to motivate the dog. And I'm squarely in the sort of, well, let's motivate them with positive reinforcement camp. And it seems like, people are just coming down on party lines. Some people are comfortable training with food. Some people are more comfortable training with force. And luckily there's there's a choice out there still. None of these practices are yet illegal.
Are there certain basic standards that one should look for when selecting a trainer?
Yes, there are three sets of standards available. One is written by the American Humane Association. They've put out a document that was put together by behaviorists, veterinarians, and animal trainers with regard to sort of best practices for dog trainers. There's also one put out by the Delta Society. And finally, there's a code of ethics standard from the Association for Pet Dog Trainers. So people who are consuming dog training services need to be smart consumers because this is not a regulated profession. It's not like contractors or orthodontists where you need to get a license. Anybody can hang out a shingle and say they're a dog trainer and do pretty much anything to your dog. So try to find a trainer who adheres to these standards of conduct. Brush up on them yourself. Try to find a trainer who's into continuing education. And, of course, I would recommend to people that unless they have some prevailing reason why they just absolutely can't bear to train with positive reinforcement, steer clear of the force stuff. You just don't need it.
And is that really going on as much today? It seems to me there's been a shift away from that.
There has. I mean, when I started training in the 1970s, everybody trained by jerking dogs on chains. That's all we did. That's all we knew how to do. That was the only method available. There's been an explosion of interest in the science of animal learning and sort of applications of this. And so now we've got more, and each year there are more and more treatises and sort of proofs of what can be done without any force whatsoever. And so it is much, much less prevalent. However, I think there probably always will be a contingent of people who just will reject this because for them it just feels right to want to force the dog. They can't bear the idea of rewarding the dog. They really want the dog to sort of submit to them. They have this kind of dominatrix attitude, and I think that comes from inside people. And no matter what kind of technology is available, some people will want to do this.
There are so many parallels between training a dog and raising a child, and I think
it used to be that you could do anything to children.
Well, right, and this whole notion of winning respect and cooperation
yes.
through fear
yes.
you know, it may work to get the desired behavior, but then what comes along with it, right?
It can absolutely work. I mean, my grandfather used to tell me stories of corporal punishment that he received in public school. If somebody tried to do that nowadays, they'd be sued into oblivion and possibly brought up on criminal charges. So the way our society is progressing, the likelihood is that probably in our lifetimes, a lot of the more egregious dog training practices will become illegal. But till that happens, and there's going to be this sort of this transition stage where both kinds are available, and there's going to be this philosophical debate. It exactly parallels the changes in child rearing. There was a sort of violence, and then there's sort of, well, you can provide consequences to children and rear them perfectly well and have lots of boundaries and stuff without any violence whatsoever.
Well, that is the difference. It's the notion of what the limits are, what's appropriate, what are the boundaries with respect. And then I think in terms of dog training, what you get in the long run is a dog that isn't fearful,
right,
but just knows his or her place.
Precisely. I mean, I think there's this straw man argument which equates training with positive reinforcement, with having no rules, no boundaries, and being permissive. And nothing could be further from the truth. The only thing that is eschewed is the use of fear and physical sort of force, which if you think about it, if I was trying to teach you to speak Spanish or to play the trumpet, it probably wouldn't help to smack you when you get it wrong.
I wouldn't want to come back for the next lesson.
No.
So, Gene, there's been so much to talk about here. I'm wondering, I want to also get to your top 10 dog training tips. Can we do that in a separate episode?
You bet.
Okay. Thanks so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Gene Donaldson. If you've yet to browse through the books on the Smarter Shopping page of the Good Dog website, you are in for a treat. Any book about dogs that we've mentioned on any episode of Good Dog can be purchased from Amazon.com directly through our site. Today's guest, Gene Donaldson, has two excellent books out, The Culture Clash, A Revolutionary New Way to Understand the Relationship Between Humans and Domestic Dogs, and Dogs Are from Neptune, both of which can be purchased by clicking Smarter Shopping and then Good Dog from GoodDogPodcast.com. Next week, we'll feature part two of my conversation with Gene Donaldson, in which she explains the 10 commandments of dog training. I'm Joanne Green, and I love hearing from Good Dog listeners. Send an email to gooddog@smarterpodcasts.com.